We'll begin our class on behavior issues, natural remedies. Other times we call it the biology of learning and behavior. We're going to look today at the connection between biology, physiology, and how a child behaves and how they feel. My name is Diane Kraft, and we're going to explore the relationship today between the gut and the brain and other parts of the body in association. Many times what we think are character issues and character development in our kids is so important. But many times I'll have homeschool parents come to me and they say, we want to know, is this a character issue this child is struggling with, or is something else going on? As a special education teacher, I homeschooled my son and then went back into the school system when he was finished with homeschooling. I came from the paradigm, the thought, that things were psychological, because of course that's where we get our training. Being a Christian and believing very much in God's word, I knew from Proverbs the importance of character training. So between psychological, nurture or nature, you know, they've always had that debate. Is a child responding to things because of how they've been raised, nurtured? Or is it because of something innate in their body, genetic or such, nature? Well, and then I came from my background where I also knew that there was a spiritual component to that. So I thought all three of those I had pretty well covered. Until I began to see things in the children that I taught. In the morning, I taught bright, hardworking, but struggling students. In the afternoon, I taught bright, hardworking, not struggling students. I wanted to know, what did my group have in common other than the fact that they were having to struggle? So I began to look at the intake paper, the paper that the parents turned in when these children were first tested. And what I found is, I thought maybe all of them hadn't crawled. Well, about 50% of them hadn't crawled, so we know crawling's important. But as I looked further, I saw that 80% of the kids had multiple antibiotic usage. Like not just once in a while, but back-to-back use of antibiotics. And 99% of them were very allergic. We know now the role of histamine is a huge role when it comes to blocking the ability of the left and right hemisphere to connect and to communicate with each other. When I was teaching school, I saw as the line for children to receive their mid-dose of Ritalin, as that line lengthened, I also saw the corresponding line lengthen for the kids to line up to get their inhalers before gym class. Is there an association? There is. Number one, we treat both with a stimulant, don't we? Albuterol, theophylline for the asthma, Ritalin, Dexedrine, all of the other stimulants for the attention issue. But we found a much more underlying issue. And I began to explore that and saw it in my own classroom. So we're going to talk next hour a little more on this, but I would see my boys had more white spots on their fingernails. My boys who were struggling more than my boys who weren't struggling. Not necessarily with learning, but maybe with attending or difficulty falling asleep. I began to see common characteristics. And then we realized, and we have known this for actually 20 years, that when we talk about dyslexia, you know, true dyslexia is unusual. I mean, it's not as common as we think. Many people say their child's dyslexic, but they like to read. Well, in my book, that isn't necessarily a dyslexia. Dyslexia is everything wants to turn upside down and backwards and upside down. But what we have found is there's a chemistry to dyslexia. We knew 20 years ago that families that had kids with dyslexia in it, that they were more prone to have immune system problems in their families. Either arthritis or asthma or lupus was more prevalent in their families. Dr. Jacqueline Storti, who is a researcher out of England, wrote her book. It's a, you know, she's a scientist, so she wrote it strictly as a scientist. It's called the LCP Solution. LCP stands for Long Chain Polyunsaturated Fatty Acid Solution to the four things she said run in families. dyslexia, dyspraxia, ADD or ADHD. She said it'll pop up as different things. Dyspraxia, we sometimes call the clumsy child syndrome. If it's just involving speech, it's the motor movement of the tongue and mouth that's required to make, to articulate easily. So she found that as she was studying in her family members that had more dyslexia than other family members, she wanted to find out why some are more impacted by the dyslexia than others, and she found out that those who had been nursed longer, had breastfed longer, it impacted them less. So then she began studying the components of breast milk, and they came up with DHA, which is docosahexaenoic acid, which is fish oil. It's in mother's milk, and it's in fish oil. So discovered that many of those things that we thought were just strictly a reading problem or a psychological problem are a physical problem, and that's what I saw in the schools too. Dr. Andrew Stoll, who is a researcher out of Harvard University, found that they were looking for a matrix, something that would match what lithium and Depakote would do for bipolar, how it would balance the mood. They were looking for a match for that and yet be natural, because they couldn't add so many medicines together, which they end up doing a lot of. As they looked for the match, one kept coming up all the time. It was fish oil. And in his studies, he uses that a lot for postpartum depression, for bipolar. And we have Dr. Donald Norton, he wrote his book Beyond Prozac. For his patients, he says, how can we build serotonin naturally? He uses a combination of oils, the same combination Dr. Jacqueline Storti uses for hyperactivity. So we're going to look at all we found in association. When one of the last years I taught, I had a young boy named Lloyd who was a first grader. And he was a big boy for first grade. And they were beginning to have a lot of meetings about Lloyd because he was getting into trouble. Because during the recess, he was pushing kids and hitting them and getting in trouble. And normally, first graders push and hit a little bit. It's not a big deal. But because he was bigger than everybody else, he was getting in a lot of trouble because he actually ended up hurting other kids. And of course, the parents and teachers and everyone were up in arms. At first, they took Lloyd just to the principal's office and talked to him, and how can we help you, and all of that, until finally they were beginning to have staffings where they were considering putting him in what they call a behavior lab. In the school where I taught, they had a behavior lab where the kids would go in and be a self-contained classroom. They would have social workers and psychologists work with these kids, and they would all be on medicine to modify their behavior. So my goal, I wasn't a behavior lab teacher at all. I taught the kids who were bright but struggling with learning. So I saw that I didn't want that to happen. So I talked to the teacher and I said, well, has this all happened after Christmas? He was really pretty good before Christmas, nothing alarming at all. And he said, has Lloyd been well lately? She said, no, he didn't come back from Christmas vacation for a long time because he was so sick. And even then he hasn't felt well. And I talked to the mom, I said, what happened? She said he got strep infections, one after another after another. So he had like four back-to-back antibiotics, and each one was stronger and stronger and stronger. And said, oh, I know what we can do to help Lloyd. Because this is a revolutionary research we found. We know that serotonin is the neurotransmitter that helps us stay calm, not be angry, not be depressed, helps us to focus, but that neurotransmitter that's so important is made in the lining of the gut. 95% of all the serotonin we have available for the pons center of our brain to release is made in the gut. That is Dr. Michael Gershon's research out of his book called The Second Brain. That he says is so funny. He says he's a gastroenterologist, and you know what, at the medical conventions, everybody would stay and listen to the heart surgeon, because it was fascinating. When they'd stay and listen to the brain surgeon, that was fascinating. But he got up and he'd talk about the gut, and you know, everyone had something else they needed to do, because the bowel never got a lot of attention, until he discovered that that's where serotonin is made. Serotonin is an amazing neurotransmitter. When you think about so many of our medicines are designed to increase the release of serotonin in our brain. All the antidepressants are designed for that. That's what Ritalin does. That's what Concerta does, or Wellbutrin. All of those medicines are designed to take the little bit of serotonin we have available and release more of it. So serotonin is a huge name and a huge factor in how we feel. When we think about the drugs that are being sold, the number one pharmaceutical medicine being sold is all these stomach medicines, Zantac, Prilosec. The number two is all the serotonin boosting medicines like Ritalin, Adderall, Prozac, Zoloft, Wellbutrin. Well, if they're made in the same manufacturing plant, does that make you wonder what's going on with our manufacturing plant? So we were able to help Lloyd easily by helping him make more serotonin in his brain in the manufacturing plant of the gut. And his behavior settled down and he never had to go into behavior labs. The staffings just ended. They said, oh, well, you know, he just settled down again. That was the beginning of my realization that when a child is acting bad, it's because they're feeling bad. I could have come to the conclusion that Lloyd just wasn't being raised right. Or that maybe we just needed to really have a lot of counseling sessions with him, none of which would have hurt at all. But he wasn't feeling good. And Dr. Sidney Walker has a wonderful book out there called The Hyperactivity Hoax, is how he calls it. But in there, he looks at all the different things that he has found that can be wrong or upset in a child's physiology when just medicine is being used to help that child feel better. And he has a wonderful quote that I have seen to be true when in working with kids. He said, kids act how they feel. Now, if you have a six-month-old baby, and they were just a mellow baby, and then all of a sudden, every time you try to change their diaper, they'd kick you, and you try to hold them, and they'd thrash at you, and just basically be obnoxious, you know, wake up all night, every hour, would you say, oh, we have a behavior problem here? You wouldn't, would you? You'd say, if you're nursing them, what am I eating? If they're on formula, you'd say, well, let's change formulas. You'd know something was going on physically. But when a child's 12 years old or 11 years old, or even 5 and 6, and they start getting whiny and cranky all the time, and they're negative, all of a sudden everything's negative, or they start just closing in on themselves and just going to their room and being quiet, we assume it's a character or behavior problem. But my experience has been they don't feel good. They will act how they feel. So that's the premise from which we're going to be talking today, this hour, and the next hour. How kids act how they feel, and I'm going to give you as many clues as I can in these next 2 hours to look at a child physically and see what's going on. When we can read the physical clues, they are actually literally shouting out to us why they're behaving the way they are. And if we can read those signals, then we know what to do. These are, in a talk I gave a while ago, I had just made up a list here. Just some things that can help. Children who have a dairy allergy, we found they can cause repeated respiratory infections and spaciness. In her book, No More Ritalin, Dr. Marianne Block, who's an MD out in Texas, she says the same thing that Dr. Leo Gallen and Dr. Bernard Grimlin does too, which is that dairy wants to be mucus forming. You know, when your child has a cold, you take them off dairy for a little while. Now, dairy is a good food. It's a very excellent food. We're not against dairy. But so many of the times she'll show allergic writing. And many times dairy is implicated. So sometimes it's just good to do a dairy-free trial. Sometimes it's implicated with attention issues. It's always implicated with Asperger's and autism and SI, sensory integration issues. But sometimes it's implicated with the others. When a child has hypoglycemia, that can make them grouchy. You know that, don't you? Their blood sugar dips low, so you kind of give them some little protein throughout the day. And Dr. Lyndon Smith, who used to be called the baby doctor, in his books, He says that 80% of kids who have trouble attending and focusing and follow through, 80% of them have dips in their blood sugar throughout the day. And I'm going to even take that a step further, and we're going to look later on about why some kids do fine with sugar and some kids don't. Sometimes the kids can have lots of sugar and their behavior and attention is fine. Others, they have a little bit and, well, they're just as wild as can be. Why is that? We know that subclinical iron deficiency can make poor school performance. Dr. Sidney Walker says in his book, and I have seen this to be true, about 40% of the time, children who are having difficulty attending and just plain working easily in school have what we call a subclinical iron deficiency. Subclinical means it's not going to show on the blood test hemoglobin hematocrit. They actually have to do something called a ferritin level, F-E-R-R-I-T-I-N, which is the iron binding capacity of the blood. But we don't even have to go that far. It's really easy to see when kids are sitting at my table and I'm trying to figure out why this child is having to work harder at attending our behavior than they want them to. I'll notice they look like the same color as my white wall behind them. And I'll say, oh, does your child eat red meat? And invariably it's no, they look like red meat, maybe chicken nuggets. Where do we get our iron and B12? From red meat. Now, adults can be vegetarians more easily than children because adults will eat their beans and rice together and get a complete protein. Children often will eat the beans or the rice, like one or the other. It's harder for them. So if they won't eat the red meat, then we can, you know, you could get red meat in a capsule. It's called liver capsules. And they can take that, but for a while, that needs to be something we want to look at. And I had so many parents say that yes, when they started either eating the red meat, or if they won't eat the red meat, you give them the liver capsules, you kind of prime the pump until they will start eating some red meat about 3 times a week. One mom who came to me said she was referred by another mom, and she went and asked them and said, what made the biggest difference? And he said, once my daughter started eating the red meat, we never looked back again. In other words, her behavior never got bad again. So if that's not a huge part of the population, but if your child is one of those who eschews red meat, in other words, they're narrowing their diet and they're having all carbohydrates, the more they narrow their diet, the more they upset their chemistry. The more they upset their chemistry, the more symptoms come up. The more the symptoms come up, the more they narrow their diet. And it's just a vicious cycle until sometimes they're only eating 5 or 6 foods. Peanut butter and jelly is it for them all day. One boy would only eat white foods, with noodles with absolutely no fat on it. So they're telling you something. But we have with each one of these children, praise God, he gives us answers. We've been able to pull them back, pull them out of that hole that they're wanting to get themselves into just by carefully planting in the arachidonic acid that comes from red meat. Arachidonic acid is an important brain food. And so we begin to get that in there. Then they'll eat normally. When they eat normally, then the behavior gets under control. It used to be 10 years ago, the term Asperger's syndrome was a term that nobody heard. We all knew it in the special ed group. We knew that, you know, if a child has autism, they call a high-functioning autism, in other words, a child who doesn't have speech issues, but they have other issues going on, they call it Asperger's. 10 years ago, they hardly knew about it. 5 years ago, it only come up once in a while. As of even 3 years ago, they were aware of it, but it was a rare diagnosis. When I was in Oklahoma City, and since being around in the area, it is coming up all the time now. I don't know if you are familiar with it, but that's a label they want to put on a lot. Again, most of the time, we find of all things, is etiology is in the lining of the gut. Let's look at a couple other things here. We know essential fatty acid creates dry skin and attention issues. Oh, magnesium deficiency. That causes sound sensitivity and constipation. Those are kids who put their hands over their ears all the time when there's sound, loud noise. You have to cut out labels of their shirts sometimes. I mean, the paper labels bother everybody. It's not those normal labels. It's the anything that's touching them. Sometimes they'll go so far as to only be able to wear sweatpants because jeans bother them. Sometimes it doesn't go that far. But what they're doing, they're wanting to be, Dr. Lennon Smith calls them goofy, touchy kids. But they're basically kids that things bother them more than they should. It's like their nervous system isn't coded with what it should be coded with. And so it's raw, and they're sensitive to a lot of things. So one of the things we find, constipation wants to be part of that. When you have, when a child is a vegetarian and very healthy, eating a lot of bulk, they'll eliminate and have stools 3 times a day. Well, we need to have 1 time a day minimum, and it needs to be easy. If not, then they're low in the magnesium, and magnesium is nature's tranquilizer, like that word, and nature's laxative. So if a child does well with the magnesium, we say, well, then what's eating the magnesium? So we need to look at, we're going to look at what eats that. When a child has yeast overgrowth, it causes sugar cravings, irritability, behavior, and canker sores. I don't know where the couple is, but I talked to you just before, and I think you were going to come this afternoon, and you were saying your child was doing much better, your 5-year-old, with the oils, but still has a lot of irritability. And my question was, did they have a lot of antibiotics? And the answer was no. I said, a lot of sugar cravings? That's all they want to eat. The child wants to eat is sugar and carbohydrates. You can never have an antibiotic in your whole life, and you upset your intestinal ecology by having only sugar and carbohydrates. So the nice thing is, that behavior is going to be easy to change. Another person was asking me about trauma. What happens if a person has trauma? Does that affect your memory? Absolutely. What trauma wants to do is it almost leaks your serotonin out, like a slow leak of a tire. I said to a parent, well, when they have trauma, it's like the serotonin just leaks out their big toe. And the child said, oh, Mom, did you tell her? Well, apparently he had an infected big toe. he thought I knew about that. But when we have a car accident, or we have the death of a loved one, or a child goes through foster care and is adopted, like some of these attachment disorder kids, that's trauma. And trauma lowers all of our serotonin. So we're going to look at what serotonin is. And the history of antibiotic use can cause malabsorption of food for a long time. My parents are 12-year-olds. And they'll say, well, yeah, but they only have a lot of antibiotics when, you know, before 3. How can this affect them when they're age 12? Well, if you didn't do something to balance that, it stays unbalanced. And it can affect behavior a lot, and it'll get more unbalanced the more pops and ding-dongs and ho-hos they have, which they do when they get older. Not that we're against sugar at all, it's just a matter of balance. I love the scripture, Mark 4:22. God says there's nothing hidden that won't be revealed. Remember, we can hold them to his word. If he said that, we say we're going to believe it. And we just thank you that we have these problems with our kids that we see. We know you love them. We say, Father, we're going to thank you that you're going to bring answers. And then you just get your little paddles out there, your ears. And wherever someone mentions it, remember, you magnetize yourself when you pray. And iron filings keep flying to you, an answer here, an answer there, until he puts all the pieces of the puzzle together for you. And my prayer is that today we'll have some more pieces of the puzzle for you. We know that the use of Ritalin has increased 300%. We know we've had a 500% increase in autism. We see what's going on. Serotonin is the neurotransmitter that is a very important neurotransmitter. It relaxes the mind when we have enough of it. It instills a sense of well-being when we have enough serotonin. It helps us handle stress. Have you noticed that some people can have terrible things happen to them and they just bounce back? Other people can have mildly bad things happen to them and they just collapse? I don't think it's a character issue. I have found this how much serotonin is available. The strong person has more serotonin available. When we have enough serotonin, our mind stays focused. We get a good night's sleep. And when our perception of life is more positive than negative. Let's look at the opposite so we understand it. When we are low serotonin in our children or in ourselves, we can recognize it by the fact that our mind is not relaxed. These guys say their thoughts are always racing. Going. It's not relaxed. They become afraid. One mom said that she was in one of the college classes I was teaching, and she said her son, after he had steroids for the last asthma attack he had, now he used to go to Sunday school and preschool fine. Now he doesn't want to leave her. Everything makes him afraid. He's lost his relaxed mind because the gut, which is where the serotonin is made, has been impacted. The opposite of instilling a sense of well-being is when you have that sense of foreboding. Things aren't going to turn out. You rationalize and tell yourself, yeah, things are, but you have that sense of foreboding. Handling stress. The kids, you know that you have to kind of walk on eggshells, because if you don't, they have an upset. They easily blow up. They don't handle stress easily. It's because their serotonin is low. And they don't have a good night's sleep. Often they don't fall asleep till very late. This often happens to teenagers. And you don't notice it because they're in their room and you think they're sleeping. But it's hard to get them up in the morning. They're real cranky in the morning. Well, one of the things is they're just not getting a good night's sleep. And when you ask them, if they don't listen to the radio or listen to songs or something, they can't get to sleep. And it's later and later until sometimes it's after midnight before they're falling asleep. And when they are low in serotonin, they don't get a good quality sleep. One of the moms, her little child said that when she took an amino acid that helped her to build her serotonin, she said, it's so much easier to make my bed in the morning, because when you're low serotonin, you don't get a good quality sleep. You're just kind of stirring around in your bed all the time, and the bed sheets get all over. This is an important one, the last one. When you have enough serotonin, you view life as more positive than negative. When you have less serotonin, you view the life as more negative. If in kids, you know, we recognize depression in adults. It's hard to recognize it in children because it's so subtle. But it'll come out like this. If you rewind the tape of all the things you heard during the day, and you know how we do that at night, and you realize this one child, this isn't fair. That isn't fair. Things are never fair. Or if it's teachers or different things, they just didn't like me. I didn't get that was a bad teacher, or that was a bad teacher. You know, and sometimes, you know, that's true, things are bad. But if you see a pattern, or I don't have any friends, no one will ever play with me. And you say, what about Joey and Tommy? They always play with you. Oh no, they don't really like me. So in other words, it's their perception of the world. And when you hear that a lot, say to yourself, I wonder what's happening to his serotonin. How can I get him to feel better? Isn't it hard to be happy when you have those dark feelings? We've all temporarily, I'm sure, experienced a moment of depression, or an hour, or maybe longer. You know that that's an awful feeling. And then you climb yourself out. But that's because you had enough serotonin to stair-step yourself out. If your serotonin was gone, there's nothing to pull you out. So when we see these kids, when I see a child who is angry, having trouble falling asleep, I say, well, what's happening to that serotonin? So then, if a child is doing well on a serotonin-boosting medication, I say to myself, well, if serotonin is the answer, what happened to their manufacturing place? Why are they not manufacturing enough serotonin for themselves? So then I look at where the serotonin is manufactured. And we see that it is manufactured in the gut, like Dr. Michael Gershon said. So we know that in our gut we have good bacteria, which we're supposed to have, and we have good yeast or fungus or mold, which we're supposed to have. Normally they're just fine, in a good balance. But when we take antibiotics, what we know is, remember, there are mold, and mold feeds the mold. And if you just have amoxicillin once in a while, remember, mold overcomes bacteria. So that's why you take it for an infection. That actually increases the mold in here. And so this is what we look at. With a once in a while taking an amoxicillin, It will increase the mold, and the mold wipes out the bad bacteria that was causing the strep or the sinus infection or the ear infection. But meanwhile, it first takes care of the bacteria in the gut, doesn't it? So it doesn't discriminate between good bacteria and bad bacteria. Hey, bacteria is what it overcomes. So you just reduce the colonies a little bit. You can bounce back nicely with just eating some yogurt. The kids that have the biggest problems with this upset ecology are kids that have back-to-back antibiotics or multiple use of antibiotics in their early years. Or if the kids haven't had antibiotics, but mom had antibiotics when she was pregnant, then the little guy has that spore of the mold in there and it wants to reproduce so rapidly. Sometimes moms have yeast infections when they are carrying the baby, and that again passes through to the child. So many times what we just don't recognize those physical things that tell us what's going on. And let's say that a child takes a Septra, Cicler, Augmentin, which are now we have Zithromax, many others that are broad spectrum. What that does is that begins to increase this more and more, and it's an opportunistic plant. And the more it increases, the more it crowds out the good bacteria. And pretty soon, if you have back-to-back or prophylactic use of antibiotics, where they give them a little bit every day so that they don't get the ear infection back or the urinary tract infection, pretty soon you have very little bacteria and you have a whole lot of mold and yeast in there. Then what happens is this begins to form what we call rhizoids. Rhizoids are the little roots, and they permeate the intestinal wall. And they begin to make tiny perforations here. So you see now, if we consider this intestine as a manufacturing plant for tires, and suddenly we were having fewer tires in the world, wouldn't you say, gee, I wonder what happened to the manufacturing plant? Well, that's what's going on here. The manufacturing plant has been impaired. I picked up a little cold as I was coming here. So what we have is perforated walls. So then the serotonin that is supposed to be created in here goes down to 85%, then 75%, then 65% is produced. And pretty soon, once you get below 50%, you get some real big symptoms of low serotonin. So the other thing that wants to build the yeast even faster than antibiotics are steroids. Antibiotics, we're glad to have them. We would be a sorry world without them. They save lives. But meanwhile, we want to play mop up and clean up for what else happens. I have had many kids that they say the behavior has gotten so much worse or they're spacier because they use something called Rhinocort or Vancinase. It's a nasal cortisone spray. Now, if you take an inhaler that is a cortisone, you know what they tell you to do? They say to rinse out your mouth because otherwise you get the thrush on your tongue, which is yeast. Well, what happens when you take it in your nose? I mean, it goes all the way into the labyrinths up here, the sinuses, and it grows fungus. We find that, in fact, I'm going to show you what the Mayo Clinic has found out about sinusitis. The Mayo Clinic has found, it says, nasal fungi is now the focus of sinusitis research. He says it's a total shift of the paradigm. The finding of truth suggests the need for a different approach, either killing the fungi. And so they talk about patients with chronic sinus inflammation need an antifungal nasal spray. You know, I have telephone consultations Tuesdays and Thursdays for people who are from out of state, and it's just a nutritional consultation. In other words, it's just a behavior or attention issue. And one of the ones I had recently with a fellow in Maryland, and the dad was a surgeon, a throat and nose surgeon, and the mom, when they both were talking about this young man, wonderful young man, but they were having behavior issues. And the dad just said, well, if you would just make our morning better, we would just love it, because he's mad every morning. So as we were talking about the different things and they had sent in the questionnaire, we came up with ideas. Meanwhile, they were talking about, has he had any sinusitis? Because we know that sinus is now a fungus. And so which is yeast mold overgrowth. And the mom said, oh, what about you, honey? And so he said, yeah, he's been fighting chronic sinusitis for years. So we told them about just a product called grapefruit seed extract nasal spray, which is actually an antifungal nasal spray. And so then I didn't hear from him for a little while. We carry these products, but so do health food stores. So anyway, my daughter called me about 3 weeks later and said the wife had called for 4 more bottles of grapefruit seed extract nasal spray for the dad, because he had finally gotten rid of his chronic sinusitis and he was giving them to his other physician friends. We hear that all the time. If you haven't tried that, if you are a person who suffers from sinus problems, that would be so worthwhile at $7 a spray bottle or something. It is so worth it. I had one mom who said her son had chronic asthma. For him, it was because of a nasal drip. And once she used the nasal spray, she was able to clear up the nasal drip. He didn't need his inhaler anymore. Doesn't happen all the time, but it's sure worth it. If a child has had a sinus infection, we know that mold wants to be in the labyrinths right up here. So we can systemically get rid of the yeast overgrowth, but we can't get rid of it in the labyrinths up here, can we? You have to directly get rid of that with a spray. So we didn't realize, we took sinus problems for granted, didn't we? But if your child has repeated sinusitis or the nasal drip, it really is easy to get rid of, because now that we know it's a fungus in there. One mom said her son woke up and he sneezed probably 15 times every morning, just had to sneeze himself awake. And she said, do you think this will help? They said, well, I don't know. We haven't had any history of that. I guess bottom line, it won't hurt. And so she used it and she emailed back and said, yeah, he doesn't wake up sneezing all the time. It's not as good for, if you're coming down with a virus or a cold, it's not really much of an answer for that. But I tell you, for chronic sinusitis, for my sister in Duluth, it was the end of her lifelong battle with sinus infections. In fact, you probably have here in Michigan a lot the same weather they have in Duluth, don't you? Pretty wet, a lot. Humidity pretty high, and that's what she was struggling with. So when I send out questionnaires and I find out a child has a previous history of sinus infections, I think I know where the behavior and their struggle is coming from. So we look at the steroids. As long as the child is taking Vancinase, Rhinocort, and those kinds of inhaled steroids, it's hard to get that behavior under control. They told you, if you look at the PDR, many times that the inhalers and the steroids themselves will cause mood swings. Well, and they do. I believe probably the way they cause the mood swings is this yeast overgrows. It puts off a toxin called acetaldehyde, and that blocks the neurotransmitters in the brain, serotonin and acetylcholine neurotransmitters, and it impairs the ability of the body to make its own serotonin. So what do we want to do? We want to begin to change that. It's called a dysbiosis. By the way, I had one young man one time named Ian, and he and his dad would come. It's when I could see kids once a week. His dad was a pastor. And Ian would come, and he was pleasant, but he was just, giggly and giddy. He was 15. And one time Ian was there, and he was just being so giggly, and I said, Ian, you and your dad have to stop just going to the bar before you come to see me. And he just laughed. And so I said, well, Ian, tell me, what do you have to eat before you come here? Well, he was going to an alternative school. And this school, in order to make money, had a vending machine. And for a quarter, they could get a pop, or a ding-dong, or a ho-ho, or a little Debbie. So I said, so what did you have before you came here? He said, well, I had some money, so I had a pop, and I think a ding-dong. Oh, maybe a ho-ho with it, too. I can't remember. I said, I see. So he was, actually, what happens if you have yeast in here, an overgrowth of yeast, if you have sugar in there, and it's dark and warm, what are you making? Ethanol, right? So you know there are glad drunks and there are mad drunks. He was a glad drunk. In fact, it's talked about in The Yeast Syndrome by Dr. Trowbridge, T-R-O-W-B-R-I-D-G-E. Dr. Trowbridge has a book called The Yeast Syndrome, and it talks about a little boy in there called Duffy Mayo, and he was a four-year-old little guy, and he was having such major temper tantrums and behavior problems, so much so they were going to say he was autistic. And the parents did everything to pull, strip down everything in his room because of all the allergies. Where are the allergies coming from, though? From the gut. So anyway, they began to find out about an antifungal therapy. But prior to that, she said they'd go to the physician's office, a pediatrician, and she said she'd be so embarrassed. Duffy would just have these giggling fits and just slide down the wall, you know, slither down there, just giggling, and she just couldn't get him back into, like, reality. They found that was fungal-related, and they began to change this dysbiosis that he had in his body, and his behavior was good. Do you know that Dr. Rimlin in his Autistic Research Institute in San Diego found that 49% of kids with autism respond to antifungal therapy because their gut is so impaired with repeated antibiotics? So we can, what Ian did though, he and his, without knowing it, when he and his dad came, he was actually creating this problem just by having so many carbohydrates and so much sugar. He never had antibiotics. He was creating that upset himself by putting in carbohydrates and sugar. You know, if you've ever wanted to make bread and you want to find out if the yeast is active, remember what you do? You just add some sugar in there and it bubbles and it creates a reaction. That's what happens when we eat sugar. So, not that sugar is bad and totally at all. It's just that some kids can't handle it like others. So when I was teaching this college class of teachers, I said, you notice this. When there's a birthday party and you kids bring in pop and cake and ice cream, some kids just are bouncing off the wall and other kids are fine. I think this, the kids that are bouncing off the wall from it have already this yeast overgrowth and this upset, this intestinal upset. And it's such an easy thing to turn around. So when we have kids who have ADD, hyperactivity, bipolar, Asperger's, autism, SI, which is sensory integration, we find that usually this is the etiology of it all. That they're finding that more and more all the way through. So what happens is, without knowing it, our kids have this overloaded. In other words, a camel was designed to carry a lot of bundles, but you give them too many bundles and they collapse. Your child can handle a lot of things. We do not have to have a perfect world. But if it's too many, they collapse. And for us, the collapse looks like a behavior issue, our learning, our attention. And it's really a physical collapse. So we can just cut down, just pull off one or two bundles. We don't have to pull them all off. One or two, and they can stand up and they can handle things. One of the things that happens is we get impaired absorption of foods. Let's say a child has dairy, which is the most common protein when they're younger. They have that, and they already have this leaky gut. Some of the undigested dairy protein molecules go through this intestinal permeation. It is picked up in the bloodstream as an allergen, and the mast cells put off histamine. And so we have found that histamine plays a huge role in how the left and right hemisphere can go together. Remember, we were talking in another class about kids whose reversals come back. I had a child who was doing the writing eight. The mother brought their child from Illinois area as a fourth grader. All his reversals were straightening out. She emailed me. They were so happy. And then it came to be April, and he was not only was reversing again, he was reversing in his name, which is really unusual. We were trying to email back and forth and figure out what it was, and I couldn't figure it out. And so they drove, I think it was a 12-hour trip, and they came in, and when the little boy walked in, I thought, oh, I wished I'd thought to ask that question. They had all been camping, they'd all been hiking, and they'd gone through some poison oak. But for him, it just about closed his eyes. He had such a swelling, and he had patches in his arms. Now, every family member had been through that, the same weeds. But you see, His histamine level was this high, so that just put him over. Their histamine level was low, so they could handle that, and they got a little itchy. Histamine wants to separate that left and right hemisphere and cause us to almost have dyslexic-like reactions. So for those guys, well, then we knew what to do. We did everything to lower histamine. Calcium lowers histamine. Anything that buffers. Histamine's acid. All your antacids are antihistamine. So once we lowered the histamine, the reversals straightened out, which is why after I had my master's in special ed and figured this out, I went on and got a degree in nutrition, because I realized there was another piece to the puzzle. There are probably a lot more pieces. These are just the pieces that I found goes together. There was an eighth grader, a girl, who was bipolar, and her psychiatrist was getting very upset, and the mom was, because they were giving her Depakote for bipolar, but they couldn't get a therapeutic level. The reason they could, they didn't know why, but they kept increasing the amount until they were way beyond her weight limit, and they were afraid she was going to get toxic. But her moods wanted to still swing out. So the mom began giving just this good bacteria is called Lactobacillus acidophilus. So she just began giving her some acidophilus and began healing up these holes in here. And the next time she went in to see the doctor, she had a therapeutic level without any increase in medicine at all. So we tell parents, if your children are taking medicine, you know, continue, of course, with the medicine, but what you have to watch is when you're going to begin to replace this good bacteria, they get better absorption, not only of their food, but better absorption of medicine. So they're going to absorb more medicine. The beauty of it is, if they are taking high doses of Ritalin or Concerta, or those kinds of medications, then it will really reduce the need for a lot of that, which is why you want to work with your doctor. But we, you know, what we're often getting now are kindergartens and first graders that they're putting on Ritalin. Do you know they sometimes put three-year-olds on? That, well, then where do you go from there? What are you going to do when they're 17? And oftentimes they'll have a cocktail of four different medicines. We're not against medicine, but let's see if we can get all of this to work better. Let's look at some of the symptoms. And you have them on your sheet. Behavioral characteristics of yeast overgrowth. Number one, we see hyperexcitability, we see mood swings. Yolanda is the name of a little girl, her mother's Maria. She said we could talk about her because she was a third grader. And little Marie was just always angry, antagonistic. Everything her mother said was, oh no, it was the other way. Sometimes we call them contrary Mary. You know, whatever you say, it's the opposite. Well, that was what Yolanda was doing. But so the mother initiated just some good acidophilus and do a little natural antifungal, and her statement was, Yolanda likes me again. And here the mom had given up, you know, her life to homeschool her and couldn't get her to like it. I had one mom who told me this. She had been to the psychiatrist and they had said, you have a personality conflict with your son. And so she had tried, they'd gone through therapy, she had done all the things she could, but she's just started healing his gut. Remember, gut and brain are the same. So she was healing his gut, and she said, they get along fine now. So apparently the conflict was resolved. If a child doesn't feel well, it's really hard to make them like you or to make them behave well. Spaciness is something that we see with this. Kids who can't attend well. You know, it's real easy to see ADHD. It's real easy to see hyperactive kids, isn't it? Takes about a minute and a half to diagnose that. So no question about it. It's the ADD kids that are harder. Those are your quiet kids. They have a good demeanor. They look like they're paying attention. They're even looking at you when you talk to them. But you ask them what you said and what? I mean, they were right there. Their eyes were meeting your eyes. and you ask them, huh? But what were they? They were someplace else. They are the passive types. They are in their own little world while you thought they were attending. It often looks like they're not wanting to pay attention. You often think it's a behavior problem. But really, they don't have, it requires energy to pay attention. sometimes people say, well, that child doesn't have an attention problem. They could play a video game for hours. So, but it's just when I talk to them that they don't. What we found is the video game has so much energy, doesn't it? It comes right out to here. So they only need that much energy to meet it. But schoolwork requires a lot of energy to go out and meet it. And actually ADD is less energy than they have to meet that. It's really a lowered energy condition. So in fact, that's what they're finding with Alzheimer's too now, that they have a lowered energy output. So when we see that anger and irritability, anytime I see a child who's angry or upset a lot, I think what's going on in the gut. Inconsistent performance. These are the kids that will know something one day and they'll not know it the next. A true learning disability, a learning glitch, doesn't happen that way. They don't know all their math facts on Wednesday and forget them on Thursday. That isn't a glitch. You can't overcome a learning disability one day and have it. It doesn't go back and forth. But attention will. But you say, oh no, but they're paying attention. They look at me. Well, yeah, but we can't tell. Take the hood off their head and you'll be able to see that they're in the back rooms doing something over here when you think they're up there. They're so good at that. So anytime we see inconsistent performance, I think probably allergy, and I look at what's going on in the gut. Kids who have trouble paying attention. Many parents will call and say, they're having such a bad year in high school. Eighth grade was fine. Well, they didn't get a learning disability overnight. Something happened that changed their ability to convert serotonin and stay attending. Memory problems. They feel so spacey. It takes a lot of energy to hold on to memory. The energy isn't there. And inappropriate behavior. These are kids who get in other people's space all the time. Or they're very, very loud. They use their outdoor voice all the time. And you're always saying, now use your indoor voice. And they say, all right. I had one mom from Duluth who said after she started doing the acidophilus and such, she said that her house became so much more quiet. So, you know, we wouldn't think, by the way, of giving a child birthday cake in the morning for breakfast and feeling good about ourselves, would we? But we put the word pan in front of cake and we feel real righteous about it. And then we pour a little frosting on top just for extra measure. Just, you know, some of the cheapest, even without buying any vitamins, some of the cheapest things that you can do for your child to help them so that this yeast isn't getting out of control and affecting the serotonin is just by cutting back on the sugars. The pancakes, the sugar cereals, the juices. Juices are our biggest offenders. The fruit loops, the fruit roll-ups, granola bars. I always say, just get a Snickers candy bar. Keep it around by you. Keep that little label. It'll say something like 30 grams of carbohydrates, 35 of sugar. You add the two together, you can subtract fiber, so you get 65 grams. Now then compare that to other things. Gatorade is 85 grams. Cocoa Puffs or all of those good sugar cereals, frosted mini wheats, they're about 50 grams. Orange juice is about 40 grams. So just without knowing it, you see how we inadvertently give them Snickers candy bars all day? And then that is hard on their ability to attend. So we believe in giving them a dessert a day, but just not dessert all day. Breakfast, lunch, and dinner. So then you just do popcorn a lot more, and nuts and seeds, and yes, some a cookie. So you want to have a cookie for after, you know, you've done this. But that's if they haven't had a cookie for breakfast, in essence, and the same amount of carbs and lunch. So if we see these kinds of inappropriate behaviors, and we see canker sores, that white, crater in there will always grow fungus. Stomach aches, leg pains. Many people say that's growing pains, but all your kids grow, don't they? Not all of them have pains, so it's not necessary. Sugar cravings, all kids like sugar. How do we determine when it's a craving? It's when they hide it in a closet, or they eat it out of the sugar bowl, All they want is pancakes for breakfast and they have a fit. I had one mom who had a four-year-old who was had such wild behavior. She was saying, oh, they didn't know what they were going to do with him. She said, all he'll eat is donuts. I said, oh, and he can drive. She said, well, no, he's only four. I said, oh, I was just wondering, how did those donuts get to him? So, well. And one mom said, yeah, but you know, when you're going grocery shopping, they just put those things in the cart, you know, they just beg so. He said, well, you know, there's a home. They can stay there. Someone watches them. You go grocery shopping by yourself. What we don't want is any grocery enablers. You dads know the grocery enablers are. Did you bring my Fruit Loops? No. Did you get ice cream? How many gallons? In other words, we've got to kind of help them out a little bit. We're not against dessert at all, just not dessert all day. So just watch the labels. It will be, you know, you guys like to watch a pocketbook, and we're going to talk about some vitamins, but I can tell you this, do the vitamins just a short time, then stop them, and just reduce the sugar, and you will not need to pay for acidophilus anymore, because this is all going to replant and grow fine by itself, as long as that can be watched. Do you know that processed food costs 3 times more anyway, doesn't it, than regular food? Shop in the periphery of the store. On the outside where everything's plugged in, where the live foods are. Just dip in for tuna and mayonnaise, and that's all. So we see enuresis, a lot of bedwetting. Sometimes kids wet during the day. Sometimes they have what the dads call skid marks in their pants, which means they're having a little bit of a bowel issue. All of that seems to respond to getting that gut ecology straightened out. Nervousness, kids who bite their fingernails down to the quick. Difficulty falling asleep. Milia was a fifth grader about 10 years ago. I worked with her and she said, she was taking acidophilus and I said, well, Amelia, is anything any different? She said, well, let's see, I fall asleep easier and I don't wake up mad at my brother. So part of brother would probably be pretty happy too. If you have thrush as an infant, that spore is in there and wants to regrow. So what are the things we do? The answers are easy. By the way, it says, a good set of bowels is worth more to a man than any quantity of brains. You just didn't know that, did you? How can we restore this gut ecology? Well, we do, if they're younger, we just do step one. If they're older, we have to do step one and step two. So you can kind of determine. There, Lactobacillus acidophilus is the name of that good bacteria. Let's deliberately plant it back in. When we plant it back in, we force some of the yeast to move over and make room for the good bacteria. If your child is taking an antibiotic, always give them acidophilus with the antibiotic so that you won't get the subsequent yeast overgrowth. Because it'll sneak up on you after you have an antibiotic or two, pretty soon you want more sugar and more sugar and more sugar until pretty you realize you're having it all day. Your sugar craving will decrease as you increase the acidophilus. So I use a good refrigerated brand, Nature's Way. There's also Country Life is a good brand, Jarrow, J-A-R-R-O-W is a good brand, but you will find no help with the chewables or with the liquid, because parents are saying, oh, I used it and it didn't work. What kind did you use? Oh, the chewable. They taste way too good to be good for you, you know. The banana flavored cherry, they're wonderful, they're too weak. And the liquid is too weak. You just know, you know, as long as you're going to give something that's going to work because it's a putz to give. So a Nature's Way or Country Life or Jarrow, they all refrigerate those. When they manufacture them, refrigerate and transport, and so they're a good one. When we send ours out, we send it out in refrigerated packages. So just make sure one of those three that you get. This is the key, 3 times a day. Breakfast, lunch, and dinner, or breakfast, after school, and dinner. If they're babies, take half a Primadophilus Junior and put it in their bottle, and the crankers will get so much better. If they're older, take an adult size. It doesn't matter how many billion some bacteria, it says on the bottle. It matters how many times a day you give it and if it's been refrigerated. Because it can have that many billions when it was made, but by the time it's been sitting on a shelf, it doesn't have it in it. So some kind of a good acidophilus, plant that in 3 times a day. Parents tell me 1 time a day they don't notice a difference. 2 times a day they notice a difference. 3 times a day they notice a difference within a week. Then, if your child has more of the symptoms that we talked about, we also need to aggressively go after the fungus and reduce the colonies of fungus in the gut. One of the ways, there are many natural antifungals out there. There's caprylic acid, polyarco, and etc. For kids, this is what we found works pretty good. It's something called grapefruit seed extract. Don't let the health food store operator give you grape seed extract. That's a parathocyanidin. It has no antifungal properties. Grapefruit seed. If you've ever bitten into a grapefruit seed, you know it's pretty bitter, isn't it? So if your child can swallow tablets, that's best. So the second week, I'm going to keep up the acidophilus and add an antifungal. So then they'll get grapefruit seed extract 3 times a day. Breakfast, lunch, and dinner. So then we're doing these two things. How long to do it depends on how many symptoms your child had. So if you do it 4 weeks and then you stop it, if everything stays the same, nothing unravels, you're fine. Then that took care of the problem. If you give it at 4 weeks and you stop it and the behaviors start to come back, you say, oops, I didn't get it at it totally. So that's the only way I know for how long. If they have a lot of the symptoms and have had a lot of cortisone or steroids, I often give it up to 3 months. It's a food, so we're okay. If your child can swallow, there's something called paramicrocidin. We get it from Dr. Leo Gallen's book. He has a super immunity for kids. It's a doctor's brand because it's a tasteless grapefruit seed extract. They have grapefruit seed extract in liquid, but it tastes so bitter, it's hard to get anything to cover that up. All of these things are available at your local health food store. If not, we have catalogs, or we're a little cheaper than health food stores, but health food stores are more convenient. So do whatever you want. It's just get a good brand. Walmart isn't real helpful for us in these kinds of brands, but a health food store would be. So this is first we plant, then we kill. And we do it until we see the symptoms getting better. And if we see the symptoms getting better, and you will, and if this is what happens after a while, you gradually increase the sugar. I've had parents who say, oh, they were doing so well, but now we're not doing as well. And I say, huh, what's happened? Are you eating more sugar? He said, oh yeah, they have a pop every day now, I forgot, and they're doing this. Well, without knowing that, we've gradually increased the sugar. So sometimes this is what we'll do. Around Halloween or Christmas, give yourself a little trouble, and for a whole week, give acidophilus and grapefruit seed extract. Because what happens after a harvest festival, whatever they call it, it involves candy, doesn't it? It is the same. So if you know that you have a reactor, just say, okay, we're going to just keep doing this every once in a while. But you never have to do it more than a week or two after you've gotten the initial probiotics in there and the initial upset taken care of. So this is the program that we have found. It's real simple, real easy to do. So I just want to challenge you to just think about your children's behavior and think about it maybe not just in the psychological character way, which is also a good way, but just think also, how are they feeling? Can I help to restore that gut ecology? Can I help them so they make some more serotonin down in the manufacturing plant? Good acidophilus, planting in 3 times a day is very helpful, and then an antifungal 3 times a day. And the amounts are, they'll be mainly on the bottle, but nobody says 3 times a day on there. That's the part that we've learned as we work with kids. We're at the end of our time and the end of our tape. The next hour, we're going to talk about those zinc deficiencies, the role of magnesium, essential fatty acids, and the midbrain and all the things of the nervous system, how that's affected by it. And we will be room, I think, booth 63. My daughter's there. If you have questions in between, she can answer any of your questions also. Otherwise, after the next class, I will be at the booth also. Thank you very much, and God bless you. Thank you.